Welcome to Layers of Film, the show where mediocre people discuss masterful films the first Monday of each month. I am your host, Austin Killian, joined by my co-host and my little princess, Big T. How are you doing, Big T?
I'm doing perfect. How about you?
Perfect, huh? Very interesting choice of word there. I'm doing good too. I just dropped my pencil. Anything exciting happened over the past month?
Well, I just got a tattoo today.
Right?
I did.
And what is it? What is it?
It's of a little bird. It's a tufted titmouse. It's the first bird that I saw in my bird feeder.
Oh, really?
Yes.
So are all of your tattoos just going to be of like the first of whatever?
Maybe.
That's a cool story of my lice.
Story of my life. A tapestry.
That's cool. I think that's actually a really cool idea if every single one of your tattoos are like that. But if you don't stick to it, I'm not going to respect you anymore.
Well, prepare to not respect me.
Oh, dang. Do you have ideas of other stuff that you're going to do?
My next one I want to get is a snake plant. I want to get it on the back of my calf.
What is a snake plant?
It's like a mother-in-law's tongue. Have you heard of that? It's like tall and pointy and thin, kind of.
Okay.
Oh, I got this is my third tattoo. Did I tell you I got a second one in between?
Yeah. Maybe. Maybe I forgot.
My second one that I got was a little eye on my ankle.
An eye? Yeah. Just like a really nice, like realistic eye?
No, it's more of like a line work type one.
Oh, okay.
Let me show you. On our viewers online, we'll have to pay premium.
Viewers? Yeah.
Yeah.
Our Patreon supporters that get the videos.
Yeah. Feet pics. It's like this.
Feet pics. Oh, that's actually really cool. That's not what I would have thought.
It's based off of some artwork that I saw overseas.
Is that on your ankle or something? What was that?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's on my ankle.
Nice.
So I'm three tats deep and ready to go more.
Oh, man. Do you have a cap?
No.
No. You're just going to do whatever.
Until every inch of my body. No, I'm just kidding.
Your face, your eyes, your nose.
Oh God,
do it.
That would be terrible. Yeah, other than that, we saw the new Ghostbusters.
Oh, is that out?
Yeah.
I heard it got really, it's got bad reviews.
Yeah, it's not great.
Yeah.
It's like a fun, silly movie, but the previous Ghostbusters had some story to it. You know, it's about them discovering their grandpa or whatever and learning who they are. This one felt like a Marvel movie version of Ghostbusters. Like down to the giant beam in the sky, it just felt
just
like very
formula.
Phoned in.
Yeah.
And very much like they just wanted to cash out.
That's a bummer. Paul Rudd's in it, right?
Paul Rudd, yeah.
Was it funny at all in any way?
Yeah, there were some good parts, yeah.
Okay. Well, I'll watch it on streaming maybe.
Yeah. And we just started that new Quiet on Set mini Doctor
Who
series.
Oh, yeah. I've been seeing some clips and stuff at all.
Do you want to ruin your childhood?
I'm actually confused about that because, all the clips that I see are from Drake Bell, right? And I thought he was, a pedophile or something. I thought some stuff came out about him. And I'm surprised that he's on this.
Yeah, so I think that the case may have been dropped. I don't know 100%, but what I've seen is that he was accused of exchanging sexually explicit photos with someone who ended up being a minor. She didn't tell him. She lied about her age, I think is what I heard, or he didn't know her age or something.
Okay.
So yeah, I don't know. I thought the same thing too, because I do remember coming out that he was a pedophile or something. I don't know where it stands, and I don't know. Yeah. I haven't gotten that far into the documentary, so I don't know how they treat Drake Bell in this.
Yeah.
But from what I've seen, he kind of talks about a lot of abuse that he went through. So,
yeah.
But I'm not. It's not to that point yet in the documentary.
Interesting. Well,
yeah.
That's crazy, because, yeah, man. I grew up on Nickelodeon, so, just the fact that there's so much, dark stuff that was going on behind the scenes with a lot of the people, especially with Dan Schneider, who's in a lot of the sketches of all sorts of stuff. And he's even in one of my favorite movies, Good Burger. He's the boss in that movie.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
So that might be a little bit harder of a watch now. But yeah, that's crazy. That's nuts.
Yeah. How about you? What have you been up to?
Nothing. Nothing, just living life.
How's the new job?
It's fine. It's good. I realized something because, like, all the previous jobs that I've had in web development have been like me basically starting to build like a new thing from the ground up. And so, like,
yeah,
I know how it's working, but with this job, like, I've just been working on bugs so far, and it's in an existing code base that's fully fleshed out and huge, and I have no idea where anything lives and how anything works. And so, like, it's just, I've never had a job like that where I have to, like, really figure it out and try to understand what already exists and the flow of everything. So it's been a bigger struggle than I thought that it would be, which is a bummer, but I'll get there.
That's lame. I understood about 20% of the words you just said. No.
Cool.
So you don't like it as much as the other work you used to do?
No, it's fine. I don't have a problem with it. I think everyone's understanding of how slow I am to figuring where everything's out. Because, yeah, part of it's like there's just some skills that I haven't really developed because of that. Because I've just been able to just create and know where everything is already. So there's a lot of like different methodologies of like finding where things live and stuff like that without already knowing, and that I just haven't developed those skills. So it's just going to take some time. And any new job, like the first few months are always kind of tough and whatever. And this has been extra tough, but as long as they have patience with then I'll be fine.
That's good.
Yeah. Not too bad.
I don't understand coding at all. It's like the internet. I don't understand how the internet exists, but I learned recently that like kindergartners are learning how to code.
Nice. Probably some like HTML stuff.
I have no idea, but I don't understand. I don't understand how you can just put like numbers and things in a system and then you get like video games. That doesn't make sense to me.
You know, I don't really understand exactly why that is anyway. I mean, everything that we interact with are characters, numbers, and functions.
Even in the real world? We're in a matrix.
We're in the matrix. Oh my gosh. But I got like super sick in the middle of the week last week out of nowhere, which was a bummer because I wanted to get a lot done that week. And it was a perfect opportunity because it's leaving Netflix here in the next few days. I just binged all of Community in those like 2 days.
What did you think? Had you seen it before?
No, I hadn't seen it before.
Okay.
I had already watched like the first couple of seasons slowly before, and then I was just like, let's just tear through this right now because it's going to leave Netflix soon. And I like it a lot. I think it's funny. It's an interesting brand of comedy. Like the way that it's set up. I was like trying to describe it for my brother who hasn't seen it, because I was like, oh, you might enjoy it. I don't know. But I was like trying to describe like what kind of comedy. It's like, well, it's not really a sitcom. I don't know. Like it is, but it's not. But it's like the closest comparison that I could, as far as like the tone and the vibes that it gives off, is like New Girl in a way. Like that's the closest.
Arrested Development, kind of.
Yeah, kind
of. Like, where it follows a bunch of people who are just kind of weird, you know?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, like in that sense. That part of it. But like the way that it's edited, the music and all that stuff, that feels more New Girl to me. It's slightly like more wholesome, kind of. I don't know, even though that's not necessarily wholesome, but it tries to give off maybe that vibe. I don't know. But I thought it was great. Season 4, I dozed off a lot in. I didn't think that one was as strong, but season 3, I definitely laughed like a ton at. I think Troy and Abed, those two together.
Yeah, they have a great dynamic.
It's great. But you could tell, because I know Donald Glover, he was kind of getting tired by the end of it or whatever. And so he left, and you could tell, like he wasn't quite like the Troy that I was used to. So, you know, it was time, I guess. Chevy Chase leaving the show was fine by me. His character was like sometimes funny, but at the same time, I didn't think his jokes landed a lot of the time. So
they don't age very well either.
Yeah, but a character from a couple of characters from Breaking Bad are in the show, and that really threw me off. Like in season,
really?
Yeah, in season.
Who's in it?
I think season 5. How far are you into Breaking Bad. Did you guys give it a break?
Season 3.
Okay. I think you know Mike by now. You should know Mike. The old guy.
The old guy?
I don't want to.
I don't think so.
Mike?
No, we just met. Who's the chicken drug dealer guy?
Yeah, so he's in Community. Gus.
Oh, is he?
Yeah, he's in Community. Yeah, he's
That's funny.
He's Oh, I just said his name. The old guy. The other Chevy Chase. His character, whatever his name was, I can't remember.
Pierce.
Yeah, he is his like half brother or whatever.
You're right. Yeah. That's true.
So yeah, he's in it. Mike was in it. And then there's some other characters that I can't remember from some other shows that I was just like, oh, you guys are in it. So I think that was like the last few seasons. They're like, let's just try to get some star power or whatever. You know?
Yeah, they have a guy, I think, in it that's in a new Apple show called Constellation.
Okay. Yeah.
I don't know his name, but I'm pretty sure he like is an old man who replaces kind of Pierce's. He's like the computer teacher or something. I don't know. But who's your favorite character? You said Troy and Abed you like, but...
Probably Abed overall. I think Abed's just fun. I like it. And I love how everyone's like kind of protective over him too. Like,
yeah.
She's like, just keep him the way he is. Like, stop trying to fix him. He's awesome.
Yeah, it's a good series. I like it.
Yeah, I think it's great. But then I watched Dune Part 2.
Yeah.
Did you? You haven't watched it. Because you weren't really a huge fan of the first
one. I didn't
even
like Dune 1.
Man.
Dune 2 was Dune too much.
Dude, Dune Part 2, that's so many people saying, like, there was a lot of people that said Oppenheimer was like one of the greatest films from the last decade or whatever. You know, it's a masterpiece, blah, blah, blah. And like, you see Dune Part 2, and because I wasn't even like super huge on Oppenheimer, but I watched Dune Part 2, and I'm just like, Oppenheimer sucks compared to Dune Part 2. Dude, Dune 2 is. You should just watch it.
Are we talking like plot-wise? Are we talking cinematography-wise? Like,
yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I think the plot's fine. It's nothing like super, super special, but...
Like, is the story good? Is it engaging? Or is it just like another 2.5 hours of really pretty desert shots?
Leave me alone, dude. It's so good. I don't know... The plot's straightforward. It's a plot we've seen before. So, you know, just kind of someone rising up and, you know, reaching full potential type of stuff, whatever. But the way that it's executed is just so, it's so beautifully done. It's nuts. And I've said this to a few people, but I decided to watch it just like on a whim. And it was like around the same time as like my oldest like birthday party and all that stuff, and I just got done like youngest birthday, like their birthdays are like 2 weeks apart basically, and so it's just like constant cake and whatever, and so they did like this pizza party. I ate like a ton of I've got the sugar high. I decided to go watch the movie that night, and I get a whole tub of popcorn because I have like a refill bucket, and I'm eating the whole thing by myself. I'm just like getting stuffed to the brim, like, just, you know, and I think my body was having a hard time. And in the middle of watching the movie, it was just such like a like stimulation overload of just like, holy smokes, there's just so much, because it's long, but there's so much great stuff going on, like the acting, cinematography, sound design, music. It's just brilliant, like from top to bottom, in my opinion. The writing's great, and yeah, those shots are amazing. It's just, it's unbelievable to me. It's like, that's really a film that you have to see in theaters, in my opinion, with all of the sound design that, like, the work and care that's gone into it. But everything going into it all at once, and just what was going on in the film at the time, I had a moment, I think my body was, like, shutting down in a way, but at the same time, I was just, like, so into the movie that I had like this legitimate thought, and you'd think that I was high or something, that I was just like, I'm going to die tonight. Like, I had like this weird thought where I'm like, I'm dying tonight. like during this movie potentially, I don't know. But there was just so much going on in my brain and in my body all at once where it just
an overload.
Yeah, just an overload. And I couldn't handle it like conceptually or so something. Funny. I don't know, but it was great.
Your brain was like factory reset, unplug, plug back in.
Yeah. I felt like that like the rest of the night. Yeah, dude. I think that movie is brilliant. I can understand people like not really liking Dune Part One very much. It is pretty slow. Yeah. It's a slow burn and, you know, maybe not super captivating for a lot of people. But to me, I like Dune Part One a lot. But Dune Part Two blows even Dune Part One out of the water. I think it's great. And the action's nuts.
Good to know.
It's just great. I would recommend it for sure. That's definitely a movie that you got to see in theaters. And if you watch it at home with an improper like sound setup, it's probably not going to be as great, but or hit as hard. But whatever, you're not going to watch
it.
You're the worst.
Seeing it in theaters.
You're the worst. Oh, that ticks me off. Ah, makes me sick.
Then loan me the money and maybe I'll do it.
You're so dumb, dude. That's funny. Anyway. Other than that, like, I don't think I have anything else. Anything else?
Yeah, I don't.
Besides my kids' birthdays. 7 and 4.
Yeah, whatever.
Whatever. It happens every year. It's expected.
It's not a surprise.
Yeah.
No?
Sweet. All right, well, let's get into it. But before we start talking about Black Swan, of course, the movie that we're covering this month, let's do a little bit of housekeeping. Rate and review the show. It helps with discovery and gets the word out with whatever podcast service that you use. If you haven't seen the film, be aware that we will be diving right into spoilers, sometimes right from the beginning of the discussion, so continue at your own risk. Make sure to listen until the end of the show, where we will reveal next month's film, and you can write into layersoffilmpod@gmail.com to be part of the discussion. Now, it is time for our first fun segment before getting into the film, which is a little game called
Holly Would You Rather.
Hollywood.
And Big T, for new listeners, what are the rules of the game?
I give Big A two scenarios, one from the movie we just watched and one from a different film or TV show. And Austin has to decide which one he would rather do and guess which movie or TV show the other one is from.
Very nice.
Austin, are we ready?
Yes, indeed.
Holly, would you rather see someone stab themselves in the face, ugh, or see someone willingly get run over by farm equipment?
Is that... That's like an M. Night... No. Wait, maybe it is. The Happening?
Yes.
I've never
correct.
Seen it. That
Yeah, I've
shot,
heard it's not good.
That shot, like, haunted me, though, seeing that, like, in the trailer or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty great. Oh, man. Well, I feel like I would be probably seeing the other one from a distance, the lawnmower one. Maybe that one better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I would choose, too, because I feel like being that up close to someone stabbing themselves in the face would not be enjoyable.
Dude.
You could turn away a lot easier with the farm equipment or lawnmower one.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good point. You're kind of in it with the other one.
Okay, you've got one correct.
Oh, good. Well, you sound so disappointed.
Number two, Holly, would you rather turn into a swan?
Yes.
Or turn into a dog?
Turn into a dog?
Yeah.
Is this like some old movie?
There are two versions of it. One is old and one is newer that I'm thinking of. I'm sure there's many movies where someone turns into a dog, but...
What the heck?
The newest one, it's not that new. It's still pretty old. And it has Tim Allen in it.
What? Oh, is that the Shaggy Dog? No.
That is.
Oh, yeah, it is?
Correct.
I've never seen that one either.
Have you seen the clip of the old one? Someone turns into the dog and he's like chasing after his boss or like trying to get his boss or something. Mm-hmm. And he runs up to the boss and then the camera cuts out and there's someone just dressed up as a dog that like punches him in the face.
No, that's awesome.
I'll have to send it to you. It's pretty funny.
It's probably super corny. Oh man. Ooh, a swan like you're kind of like doing your own thing. And I don't think swans get shot at too much. It's more like geese and stuff. So you wouldn't really have to worry about getting hunted, I don't think. Maybe.
Probably live in a park somewhere where they don't hunt.
And you're just like swimming on the water? Dogs
can fly.
Dogs. List. I mean, if you turn into a pit bull, that might not be as desirable of a situation.
Yes, that's true.
Would you be a shaggy dog? Would you just be the shaggy dog? Those people like those dogs.
I don't know, maybe.
That could be fun. I mean, people like pit bulls, but it's a little more 50-50 than some other dogs. Let's go for a swan, because I feel like that fits my personality better.
A swan? Not a dog where you can just lay around all day?
I mean, you can lay around all day, but like at the same time, like you're really at the mercy of like your owners and how good they are, you know?
Or you could run away and live in the wild.
Yeah, that's true. But then you might get like taken up. You might get like captured and then put into a pound or something.
Into a kill shelter.
Yeah. So like a swan, I feel like they're just left alone and they get to just chill on the water.
I think it'd be cool to fly.
And that too. That too. What would you choose?
Let's go with swan. Why not? You could fly a little bit.
I like that.
Paddle around in the lake. Oh. Sunbathe.
We're like straight up two for two right now.
Okay. Holly, would you rather live with a creepy mother using you to live a vicarious life, or live with a creepy mother using you to stay young forever?
Oh, that's Tangled for sure.
That is Tangled. Look at you, 3 for 3.
Look at us.
Ding, ding, ding. You win a prize.
What do I win? Your tattoo. I want your tattoo. I want your tattoo that's on you right now.
Cut it off my skin.
Yeah, send it.
I'll mail it to you.
Oh, man. Oh, man. Let's just go with Tangled because it's just, it ends up getting happier, like really happy by the end. And she ends up being royalty. I could be royalty by the end of it. I'd rather do that one.
Yeah, I think that's what I would choose too, because the creepy mother's creepy. Like it's probably because it's like real life versus cartoon, but
yeah.
The mother in Black Swan is so weird.
Yeah. She definitely, she must be like kind of bipolar or something because she.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Plus, you get a pet chameleon if you.
That's true.
Choose the Tangled one.
I was just thinking though, like I keep assuming that it's the exact same like full story. When in reality, it's just this. It's just the one part of the scenario. So it's probably set in modern day, really, when we're having to deal with some creepy. Well, no, keeping you young forever. There's a magical quality to that. So it is more of a fantasy setting. Yeah, for sure. We're going with that.
Okay, look at you, 3 for 3, and we agreed on 3 for 3.
Holy smokes!
Never been done before.
That cinches it in. We're going to be doing this show for 33 more years.
Perfect.
Yay.
Sounds great.
All right. Well, thank you so much for the game, Big T.
Yeah.
Look at us.
You're welcome.
That was great. I'm proud of us.
Yeah, me too. You did great. Such a good job. Have you ever done all three before? You've gotten all three before, right?
Maybe guessed all three, but never.
Yeah, I don't think we've ever agreed on all three, though.
Yeah, this is incredible. We would have recognized it.
Spring has sprung, new life and new hope.
We're finally
friends. For all of us.
We're finally best friends. I'm just kidding.
Best friends for life.
Best friends.
That'll be our next tattoo. We'll get matching BFF tattoos.
Oh, yeah. Of swans. With their necks wrapped around each other.
Oh, God.
All right. Okay, let's get into the film introduction. Of course, we're covering Black Swan, released December 3rd, 2010. The synopsis is, Nina is a talented but unstable ballerina on the verge of stardom. Pushed to the breaking point by her artistic director and a seductive rival, Nina's grip on reality slips, plunging her into a waking nightmare. Directed by Darren Aronofsky, written by Mark Heyman, Andre Hines, and John McLaughlin. I recognize John McLaughlin from something. I think he's done something on something that we've covered, and I want to say it's The Usual Suspects, but I'm not sure. Composed by Clint Mansell, or Manzel. Cinematography by Matthew Libatique. Edited by Andrew Weisblum. Big actors, Natalie Portman, Vincent Cassel, Cassell and Mila Kunis. Budget of $13 million, but box office earnings were $330 million. So that's really, 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 really good.
And, yeah, super good.
And at the time that we were recording this, all I could see is that you could just rent or buy it if you haven't watched it already. Big T, this is a really interesting choice. This is a really good pick. And I liked it. I liked it a lot. I thought it was really cool. I need to watch it again. I used to be in the habit of watching all these movies twice, and I wish I would have.
Who has the time now?
I don't know. Sorry, I got like a million burps. I'm like drinking this Dr. Pepper.
Gross.
So I'm like having to take all these pauses. But it was kind of reminiscent a little bit of like Whiplash in a way, like the, kind of like the same story going on, except different.
It, yeah, definitely. Kind of the slow, unstable unraveling of someone.
Yeah, except the ending is less ambiguous to me, or not. Well, actually, no, it's ambiguous, but like, I don't know. I don't know what's real or fake. It's sort of like a Joker type of situation as well, if you've ever seen that film. You're just kind of like, you don't know exactly what really happened and what didn't. They do a pretty good job at making some parts obvious as to what happened and what didn't happen, because they usually kind of like come to a conclusion on it at some point. I'm pretty sure she stabbed herself at the end. I don't know. But again, who knows like what really was going on in her head or not. I don't know. But yeah, a little bit or a lot of bit like Whiplash, slightly different dynamic. And that's kind of due to the nature of the fact that it's between like a man director and a female kind of what it's company member. I don't know. Whatever. And so that's, you know, kind of different or whatever, especially, you know, with how sexual everything gets. That definitely doesn't happen in Whiplash at all.
That we see.
But for me, like, Whiplash was... Yeah, that's true. But for me, Whiplash... That's, dude, that, who knows? Maybe later on after the movie. But Whiplash to me was... Like, I was... It was easier... or it was harder for me to, like, come to a real, like... Come down on a specific side of, like, what I agree with and what I don't agree with. And this one seems a little bit more obvious of, like, how destructive it really is. Because she really does, like, harm herself a lot. Whereas, like, in Whiplash, the only harm that you really see is... Well, I guess like relationships, like it damages his relationships and stuff like that.
He doesn't say the only physical harm.
Yeah, physical harm. But at the same time, like all the other harm that's done is from him like actually practicing, whereas like Nina's like really like scratching herself and stuff like that, which is, you know, like nervous tics maybe. I don't know what's going on exactly. And again, like I'm not even entirely sure how real some of that stuff is. But so I don't know, a little bit harder to like kind of like not come down on a specific side of how I feel on it. But I thought like the cinematography was great. The acting was great. The music was phenomenal. It's been a little while since like something really stood out, or it just seems like it's been really rare for the music to really stand out in a lot of these films. And this one definitely stood out to me 100%, and the sound design as well. I don't know. Overall, I just thought it was great and disturbing, but amazing at the same time. Like in a way, like what Natalie Portman says a lot of the time in the film, like it was beautiful. It was chaotic, but it was a like beautiful experience, I guess, in a way. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I absolutely loved this movie.
Yeah.
I was like so invested in it and like so enthralled by this movie. Like I forgot to take notes throughout a large chunk of it, because I feel like it moves really fast and it moves very, very intensely.
Yes.
Like especially towards like that latter like 30, 45 minutes of it. It's just like boom, 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 boom. Like really from the moment she and Lily go out, Nina and Lily go out like partying and she kind of takes drugs or whatever. From then on, it is like intense the whole way through. Yeah. Like you really feel Nina's unraveling in that part of it. And to me, it was just like so, like I was so enraptured or whatever the word is with it. Like I really, really like this movie.
Oh yeah, for sure. You know, I should have looked into it, and I maybe you have, but what I thought was really interesting specifically about like the credits is, well, let me back up. Like throughout the entirety of the film, you're kind of feeling like the parallel like nature of the movie running kind of alongside the same storyline as like what's going on in the Black or
yeah,
Swan,
for sure.
What is it called? Swan?
The Swan Lake.
Swan Lake. And so you feel that a lot. And then when you get to the credits, all of the actor, it like has the different actors and then it has like their actual person name, but then it has like what they would be in Swan Lake or whatever. Did you notice that in the credits?
I didn't notice that.
Yeah. And it like the, like, yeah, she was the Swan Queen. Nina or Natalie Portman was Barbara Hershey, who was her mom, Erica Sayers. I'm not sure if they ever said her name in the film, but she was like the queen or something like that. I don't remember exactly what character that's supposed to be in Swan Lake. I don't know. I don't really know Swan Lake. I don't know any of this.
I don't either.
I don't know ballet at all or any of this stuff. So,
yeah, I told my wife, I was like, oh, I want to go see Swan Lake now.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like obvious to me too that I had no idea what was going on because like one of my first notes was like the happy white swan is met with the black swan that seems to cloud its mind with fear or something like that. But then as she's like explaining the play later on or whatever, she's like, oh, it's like a spell by so-and-so. And I'm like,
some demon.
Yeah. Some demon. I'm like, oh, I was so off. Like, and it was actually turning her into a, she wasn't a swan. She was just a sweet girl or whatever. And then she's turned into a swan. So I was just like, oh wow. I really have no idea what's going on in this ballet.
That's so funny.
I've never known the plot to it, but yeah, I just thought it was really cool that it's almost, it's like, the director of the ballet, Tamah, he wanted to do his own version of it. And again, I don't know like the original version of it, so I'm not sure how much he actually deviated from it or whatever. But like in a way, it's like this whole movie was a, like some really interesting take on Swan Lake. So I thought that was really cool and a really neat idea for the people that wrote it and for the director, for sure.
Yeah, I really like that too, that it gets very meta at, you know, one point. Well, I mean, throughout the movie, but the parallels really become explicit towards the end.
Yeah.
I really like that you can see some of these characters kind of embodying the actual characters in the play.
Were you able to follow exactly? I just don't exactly understand. And maybe it's because of the movie and it does kind of jump and you're just seeing like rehearsals and stuff like that. So you're not necessarily getting like the, you do get the entirety of the play or the ballet at the end, but it's hard for me to follow like the story because it's just dancing and stuff like that. So if you don't know the story ahead of time, you're just watching some beautiful dancing and stuff. In my mind, it's hard for me to connect it all, but like she's a girl. Help me just understand it. She's a girl and she is turned into a swan. And what's the black swan in this? Like, who is the black swan?
Who's the black swan?
Is that a separate entity or is the white swan also the black swan?
Are you talking about in Swan Lake or in this movie?
Well, either.
So I'm not very familiar with Swan Lake, but I would assume that the question is supposed to be, is Nina her own black swan?
Yeah.
Or is Lily her black swan?
Yeah, sure.
Like, that's what I think that they want. That's the question they want to raise.
I think the biggest thing that I was just confused about, just like, I don't remember when some other girl or whatever was introduced, not in the movie, but like in the ballet. What is it called, a ballet or a play? What do you call it? A show?
I think it's a ballet.
Ballet. I'm not entirely sure who the other girl is that her prince or whatever, or her love interest falls in love with. I don't even know who that's supposed to be to where she wants to kill herself at the end.
Are you talking about like who plays the Black Swan, like in the movie Black Swan?
In the actual ballet, like just the story in the ballet, not the actual like outside.
But the rendition that they do in this movie.
Yeah, sure.
Natalie Portman's playing both the White Swan and the Black Swan.
And the Black Swan is one love interest is
the prince
of the prince, and then the white swan is her, and she was supposed to be with the prince, and they were in love with each other, but then the prince falls for the black swan.
Well, the black swan seduces the prince away.
Seduces the prince away.
Yeah.
Okay, and so, okay, so Thomas is the prince. She's the white swan. They got a thing going on. Lily's the black swan, in her mind at least, that seduces the prince away, or Thomas. And so, self-destruction. Okay.
In the credits, who do they say Thomas is? The prince?
That's a good point. I should have really made a note of that. What? Let me see. Let me pull it up.
Yeah, put in some filler music.
Where is Black Swan? It's in the bees. Play. Let's skip all the way to the credits. Oh man, that ending is pretty crazy. Okay, blah 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 blah. I need to make this bigger. Skipping. Where are the credits? Because at first, like, they do the big credits or whatever, and that's like just their regular, like, actors, like their names and stuff like that. But then when it comes up, you could see, like, there's like a bunch of random stuff that comes up before. I think, like, okay, cast. Okay, so Natalie Portman, blah blah blah. The Gentleman. Oh, so it's not. Oh wait, the prince is David. Who's David?
In the movie?
Benjamin Millipede? David. Oh, David is... Oh, the prince. Oh, you know what? Okay, maybe...
He plays the prince. Is he the actor who plays the character playing the prince?
Yeah, yeah. He's the actor that plays the... Yeah, the character who plays the prince in the actual ballet. But the guy who plays Thomas is the Gentleman. I don't know who that character is supposed to be. Maybe he just...
Who is Rothbart? Does it say? Rothbart?
The actual guy who played it in the ballet. So he's not like... He's not actually supposed to be like some...
So the credits aren't telling you which Swan Lake character...
I guess, but I don't think Thomas plays anyone in the ballet either, and he still has like some secondary... part of the Gentleman, so I don't know.
I wonder,
without being familiar with Swan Lake, I'm not entirely sure if that's really,
because I don't know if there's a gentleman in it. Yeah. But I don't know. Interesting.
I don't know,
because it's interesting in this too, because the question is, like, is Natalie Portman or is Nina her own white swan and her own black swan, and then is Thomas both Rothbart, the demon who turns the woman into the princess into the swan in the Swan Lake play, the demon turns her into the swan, but he's playing both Rothbart and the prince, right?
I mean, not in the credits. He's just the gentleman.
Yeah, not in the credits. Yeah. But
I'm kind of, I was kind of speculating, like, there isn't any, like, person who's playing Rothbart. Rothbart? Rothbart? Rothbart?
Rothbart, yeah. And it's kind of a lot of different people.
It's not necessarily a lot of different people. I feel like it's the actions. It's like her impulses and stuff like that. Like, you know what I mean? Like, because I feel like
the pressure from Thomas, the pressure from her mom, the pressure from Lily, in a sense. Like, I feel like Nina wouldn't have become those. I think the scene when he kisses her is a really good example, right?
Yeah.
She's like super like timid or whatever, and then he kisses her and she bites him. And then I think when he's like, oh, you can be the black swan.
Right, yeah.
But he's realizing, like, you have to be pushed to get there, you know?
Yeah.
And so I think she has all these forces and pressures going against her.
And that's rough.
That sort of bring that out in her.
Interesting. Yeah, originally when I was watching the film, I was thinking, like, giving into those... like kind of impulsive thoughts and stuff like that. Like, that would be like the Rothbart or whatever. But maybe I like what you're saying. Like, it's like the pressure of everything and wanting to be perfect and feeding into that side of her and all that stuff. That's like the pressure is Rothbart. But I would probably, the spell is like the giving into, like, the sexual stuff that happens. Because I feel like anytime there's like something sexual going on, like, that's when the spell is happening. And especially, like, between the love scene between Nina and Lily, you could see like that like metamorphosis or whatever, like mm-hmm. starting to take hold with the dude. I love those effects of like those weird scales that were like going up and like through her like skin and stuff, like every once in a while. I thought that was so cool, and you can kind of hear it. It was so faint, but it was so good, dude. Whoever did the sound on that was just brilliant. But like when that's going, like whenever she's given into some of that stuff, like that effect always happens. And so to me, like that's the spell, right? Like that's the spell's being cast, but it happens like within the play, like the play itself, like it's, you know, it happens all in one go. Whereas like throughout the film, it's like there's a bunch of different acts that she like impulsively does. And then that's like the spell working its way even further until like the very end when she kills who she thought was Lily, but she really stabs herself or whatever. I feel like that's like the full metamorphosis or something like that, when she really can be the Black Swan and everyone's like, oh, yeah. Wow, like you're amazing. Like I didn't know you had it in you, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. I don't know. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the whole movie is about her metamorphosis.
Yeah, sure.
And the whole movie is about like, how far will you go to become the version of yourself that you want to be, that you think other people want to you to be? How far will you push someone to become what you want them to be? Like, there's a lot of sort of philosophical questions in there, but
yeah, sure.
That's what I think is so riveting about this, is that her character arc is very, very interesting to me. Because like, from the very beginning, you see that she's very much like a naive little girl still in many ways. Like her bedroom, the pink color she's wearing, her mom taking care of her, like all this different stuff, right? And then by the end of it, it's like she was willing to kill Lily. She killed herself. Like, so I just really, what? I'm a really big fan of stories where we follow along with someone having like a psychotic unraveling, and I really like when they are an unreliable narrator, so we don't know what's real and what's not real. I just really, really like that kind of psychological exploration.
Yeah, that was super neat, like for sure. Sorry, I got like 100% distracted because some ad was playing somewhere. I don't know what the heck. Like, I can't even find where that ad would have been played, but I just all of a sudden started hearing some ad play somewhere. I apologize.
Unforgivable.
I'm not sure if I'll be able to riff off of what you just said very well, because I missed some of it.
Yeah.
Well, allow me to just move on then.
Move along.
Can I just talk about the part in the play, like at the very end, when she does like, she's out as the Black Swan, and she does like maybe the first half of the part of the dance or whatever, and then she kind of goes off into the backstage like part or side stage or whatever, and then gets back on. But in that period of time that she's in like the side stage, did you notice like all of the subtle like sound design going on? And she's like really feeling herself, like, or like flowing, and you know, like she's really just you could tell like the metamorphosis is like really taking hold. This is before she starts like turning into a bird visually, like for the movie. But like you could see the scales like going on, or maybe not scales. I don't know what it is, but like, you know,
I think they're pin feathers.
Pin feathers. Like that's just like kind of going up and down and all over the place. Her eyes are red, and you could just like hear this weird oh man, it's almost like someone, like a really weird distorted version of someone that's like like breathing in, that has like a lot of you know, like kind of mucus or whatever, like in your in their throat. It's just,
like, it's kind of raspy.
Yeah, like raspy. It's just going in and out. Like you hear that breathing and all that stuff, dude. It was just so, it's like haunting, it's beautiful, it was perfect for what was going on, and especially like paired with the cinematography, like going around her and like kind of flowing around her and following her movements and stuff like that, and just kind of embracing the Black Swan, I guess. And like that's her, I guess, hallucinating, but also getting into the character of the Black Swan for the final part of the dance. And then she goes on stage and everything's like slowly turning. She's getting the feathers, she's getting the wings and all that stuff. I don't know. Did that like stand out to you as much as, like, that was my favorite.
Yeah, I don't think that like the sound stood out particularly, but I did really love, I loved the camera work.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it felt so intentional. And I do feel like that scene where she's like before, during, and after her metamorphosis, it's just done so well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and like, I also, I mean, you already kind of mentioned this, but the music I thought was so great. I loved the music in this. Like, it's perfect almost.
Yeah, because it's like following along with the movie. Like, it is Black Swan Lake.
And it's like all ballet music too, you know?
Yeah. And it, yeah, it follows like the plot twist or plot, you know, points that are happening when something like devastating happens to her. And in real life, like the music starts ramping up like it's a ballet. It's awesome. I think it's brilliant. Whoever, is this based off of a book? I don't even know.
No, the writer saw the writer saw Swan Lake, or the creator of it. And then he had been wanting to do a movie about like, the psychological relationship of like an understudy and the main, the principal actor, and kind of like this sort of loose idea of like a doppelganger, like that understudy is like your doppelganger, you know?
Interesting.
And so he saw Swan Lake, and then that's kind of what inspired it, was he sort of like wove the two together.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
It's brilliant. That's like such a great idea. I think it's so, this is such a creative, like, yeah, again, like watching the film, it was just like, this is such a creative, because I couldn't relate to Swan Lake really at all, because I hadn't seen it or heard about it, but or heard about what really happens in the play. But like, this is such a really creative way to take on kind of the same story as what's going on in Whiplash.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
it's kind of like, sorry, go ahead.
Well, it's just like Whiplash is so grounded, and then this is just like really going into like the mental stuff. Like
yeah,
visualizing,
you don't know what's real and what's not.
Yeah, visualizing the mental state of like what's going on, which is really cool. What do you think about, like, because you were talking about like the doppelganger stuff of you know what the writer was wanting to do. What exactly do you think they were trying to say with like her seeing her face in all of the black, like swan like figures that she would see throughout the film, and like seeing her own face? Because to me, it was like, it was like she sees herself or a part of herself that she wants to come out, but like she just can't, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, this is sort of like the impression that I got, was that she has been conditioned by her mother to be childlike even into her adulthood.
Yeah.
And so her entire life, consciously or not, she has suppressed this anything but like the naive, timid little girl. Like, she's suppressed that her whole life. So she thinks that's who she is on the surface of like, oh, I'm just this, you know, she talks really softly and she doesn't really make eye contact and stuff.
Yeah.
And I think that she starts to see herself in those other black swan like figures. And she's kind of scared at first. It freaks her out because all she's known her whole life is being the white swan, you know?
Yeah.
And then she's sort of been given these glimpses of her being the black swan, but it scares her. She doesn't really like it. It's unfamiliar. And then she's kind of embracing it towards the end, by the end, you know? But I get the feeling that she's like, it's not something that she's forced into. It's something that's always been inside of her and it's getting pulled out and she's not sure how she feels about that.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, I think I was wondering like what you thought about that, but then I was also struggling myself with like what I thought they were trying to say with like her seeing herself, you know, in all those different black swan figures and like kind of having that suppressed part of herself and wanting to bring it out, but also, yeah, not being sure of like what to make of it and not really knowing how to handle it. But also at the end though, because it seemed like she wanted that, especially because she needed the part and she needed to be great because she wanted to be perfect as both the white swan and the black swan, but not really being able to obtain the mentality of the black swan, I guess, for the play itself. it was just interesting to me at the very end when she's confronted with who, I mean, she thought Lily was there, but she wasn't in her dressing room, and she stabs her. And so she sees her face in that black swan like figure that she's hallucinating in her dressing room. And then she stabs her to kill her. And I was trying to, I think I might have a theory now, but last night I was just like, what does that mean? Like, she killed the part that she wanted to be. So, but then she was able to do it anyway. But now I'm wondering if it's more like, I don't need you to be separate anymore. I am now both. Like, that's killing.
Yeah, that is the take that I got, was okay. That she was, in her mind, she was killing Lily, which was her competition, which was her, who she thought was her own black swan, but it was actually her fully embracing her own black swan.
Yeah, okay. All right. Yeah, I was so confused. I'm like, I don't get it. You just killed the black swan that you needed or whatever.
I think she thought she was killing her own black swan, but it's actually, that is the moment when she becomes her true black swan.
Yeah. I agree. And it's, yeah, especially like when you're thinking about, I think she hides the body, and then there's like this awesome shot where it's just showing just her face and you see her eyes are just totally red. Mm-hmm. So cool, dude. And like that, yeah, that's what it's like. Yeah. I am both now.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. I was so relieved when it's like, when Lily comes back up later, I was like, oh, she didn't kill her. Thank goodness. Cause I was just like, because that would make her a really messed up character, you know?
Yeah.
It's just like,
well, it's funny too, because she killed her, and I was like, there's no way she killed her. People would be like, where is Lily? Yeah,
exactly, right?
Yeah. That doesn't happen, you know? She's not going to be dead the whole time. People are like, where's Lily? Like, you're missing a giant gap in your lake team.
Yeah, exactly. And then at the same time, like, I was kind of thinking for Nina. It's just like, what are you going to do after the play, dude? Like, someone's going to find this body. Like, what are you going to ask your mom to help you hide the body? She's probably not going to help you out because she's so not into this side of you. Like, your career is over, dude. And that's actually a good point. Like, is she dead by the, like, after the play? What do you think? Did she stab herself at all? If she did, is she going to die or is she going to make it through? I would assume she would honestly make it through, because that piece of glass wasn't that deep.
Yeah, but it was in there for a while and she bled out a lot.
That's a good point.
Which I'm like, she would have bled out, she wouldn't have like only started bleeding out at the, you know, when she hits the mattress.
Which leads me to believe that it didn't actually, maybe she was even hallucinating that part. I don't know.
Yeah, but in all of her other hallucinations, do other people interact with the hallucination?
That's a good point. At least people, like witnesses, you mean? Like other
people? Yeah, do people perceive the hallucination? Because in all of the other hallucinations, I don't think
that's a good point.
Anyone else is party to it.
Yeah, because she's alone with Beth in the hospital, but there's no witnesses to that whole hallucination, if it is a hallucination. Mm-hmm.
A hallucination, yeah. But when she sees her that in the tub, she's by herself. When she turns into the swan in her bedroom, when her like legs break, I was like, ooh.
Yeah, that was.
Yeah, she's by herself. When she sees, she sees her face on that woman in the subway, but it's no one interacts with her.
That's true.
So that's the only reason why I think that, and the fact that the ending kind of loses its oomph if it's not really, she didn't really kill herself, because the whole thing is like she's in pursuit of perfection.
Yeah.
And in order to be perfect as the white swan, you have to die by suicide, because that is what happens in the part, you know?
Yep.
So that's what makes me think that it is. And then like the blood coming out is just sort of like a narrative element of it, you know?
Yeah, sure.
But I don't know.
You know, at the, like, when she was saying that it was perfect, like, that's, like, the last line of the film, I think. Right when she said that, I was just like, oh, yeah. Like, because she's always said that the story of Swan Lake is just so beautiful or whatever, even though it's, like, really depressing, really. But, but that it's so beautiful or whatever. And then she says it was perfect because, yeah, just like you said, I was right there with you. Like, it was like she did exactly what happened, and something that she found so beautiful, she actually lived it or whatever. And that's probably all she really needed in life, I guess. I don't know. Or at least that's how she perceives it.
Yeah. And too, I'm sure you caught this as well, but when Tomas first... When Nina first confronts Toma about wanting to redo her audition so yeah. that she can be it, he's like, you're so like uptight and you want to get everything right. And she's like, I want to be perfect, right? So yeah. he knows that she has this pursuit of perfection.
Yeah.
And then after you find out that Beth has thrown herself in front of moving traffic or whatever,
right.
and they're Toma and Nina are talking, Toma says something like... you know, she's like been so wonderful. Like, that's what makes her so interesting to watch. Like, she's almost perfect. Hmm. And then he like kind of, at least this is in my memory. Maybe I just sort of imprinted this, but he kind of says that Beth was perfect after talking about how she was like tried to kill herself. And then he looks at Nina like, did you catch what I just said? Like, in order for Nina to be perfect, she had to try to kill herself, you know? And I feel like in my mind, Toma is like implanting that in her. Like, in order for you to be perfect, you need to make these same sacrifices. Because it's very clear from you, the moment you meet Toma, that his goal is to have like the best, most perfect rendition of Swan Lake. And to me, Toma is like, I see that Nina is someone who would kill herself in order to be the white and the black swan. So I thought that was interesting that he seems to intentionally kind of implant that idea that perfection is like death is required as part of that.
Interesting. I didn't really take that, or I didn't take that away from it. Or whatever, walk away. Wah, you know what I'm trying to say. I can't figure it out.
Yeah.
But for me, it was more of, well, because the thing that he's trying to like hammer into her this entire time is like letting go. And so to me, that means imperfection. And it's just like, well, that's why I brought Lily out here, because like she's not perfect, but she knows how to let go. And with that comes, you know, kind of the persona of the Black Swan, which was needed for Nina. And I could have sworn, I'm pretty sure he says that in like after Beth jumps into oncoming traffic and stuff, and they're sitting out there and they're having that conversation like you were talking about. He says, that's what I loved about her. Like, she acted on impulse or something like that. Or I feel like he said something kind of like that. So not necessarily, to me, he wasn't implanting the idea of perfection, but rather the idea of imperfection and how that creates like the perfect persona that is required for the duality of the white swan and the black swan.
He says that Beth is perfect.
He said that?
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, I probably on a second watch road, I would have seen, I don't remember.
He says, everything Beth ever did came from within, from some dark impulse. It's what could make her so thrilling to watch, even perfect at times, but also destructive.
But also, okay, gotcha.
Yeah. And then I'm almost positive that he says that line and then he kind of looks at her.
I could see that.
Yeah.
And kind of, yeah, implanting the idea of like achieving that dark impulse kind of. Yeah.
And he wants Nina to be imperfect, but he wants her to be imperfect because that will make his ballet perfect.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So that is kind of where I see a lot of the whiplash too, of like, as the director of the ballet, what is he willing to sacrifice in regard to Nina as a person to get the perfection that he wants, yeah, you know? Okay. The performance that he wants.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. Sure. Yeah, I could see that. What did you think about him? What did you think about when the realization is made at the very end that she's bleeding out and all that stuff, and then he says, "What did you do?" What comes into your mind when you hear him say something like that?
Yeah, I noticed that. I was like, that's a really interesting thing to say
yeah.
to someone.
What did you,
you do? Know, not what happened. What did you do?
Yeah. What did you do?
Yeah. Which again makes me, think that he knew it, to some degree that this was going to happen.
Something destructive was going to happen for her to achieve that perfect performance. Sure. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That totally supports your theory. That's why I thought of it. I was just like, that's so... Like, what did you do? I knew you were going to do something, but how, like, why did you go this far?
Yeah, and he also has to put up appearances. He has to look like he's shocked by this, right? Because there's all these other dancers around him.
Although they see stuff, man. Like, they totally see stuff. There was one of the rehearsals where everyone was there, and he was just totally, like, laying into her.
No, I mean, he has to seem like, oh my God, I didn't know this would happen. Like,
yeah, yeah.
But I think he wanted that to happen.
Oh, or something like that. Probably not that drastic, but something like that. Yeah.
I noticed that. I'm like, that's a really weird thing to say.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting too. Like, yeah. In a way, it sort of covers his tracks. In the other way, it was just, I think he was sort of caught off guard by the drastic nature of what she had done.
The immediateness of it.
Yeah, maybe that's
And too, he calls her my little princess, right?
Yeah, yep.
Yeah.
Which Lily said would happen, you know, not too long.
Yeah.
After Beth. That's so interesting.
Do you think that the bedroom sex scene between Lily and Nina happened?
No, it did not. No.
You don't think so?
No, I don't think so at all. I think it was completely hallucinated. Because the mom doesn't acknowledge Lily at all in that entire scene beforehand.
I could see that, but, and I should have gone back and looked, when Nina goes to leave her bedroom, isn't this door stop out of place?
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Which suggests that someone moved it to leave the bedroom.
Yeah, right.
So... I don't know.
That's true. That is something. But at the same time, she was so out of it. She could have gone up in the middle of the night to go pee or something, and she doesn't remember. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't know.
But yeah, it's.
I'm not convinced because I also feel like Lily would try to gaslight her.
Yeah, I think so too. I could see that for sure.
Yeah,
like she's not above it. But I would also, to me, I'm pretty confident that it didn't actually happen because Lily does say like I don't. Like, then that my whole night with Tom or whatever, or whoever the guy's name was, didn't happen.
Unless you had a dick or whatever.
Yeah, right. And and then at the same time, like, I was really, like, tuned in and focused in on the mom when they were coming in at the first, like, at the first part before, like, the whole sex scene. And, like, in the entryway. And she did not look over it. She didn't address Lily at all. She didn't acknowledge her.
Yeah.
And as if she wasn't there. Like, it wasn't like those obvious moments of people not acknowledging someone because they're offended or whatever. It was like no one was there, no acknowledgement. And so that already had me doubt it all together. Because you think that she would have been like, what is she? Like, who is she? Or
why is she here?
Yeah, there would have been a lot more questions, especially like after closing the door. She was like, you can't do this, blah blah blah, like you have a show tomorrow, like you can't be, you know, you can't be over here or something, like, you know, you think that she would have been like,
you
that.
Ruined my daughter or something.
Exactly. And that doesn't happen whatsoever. It's just the noise stops. She just completely stops basically after like the first few seconds of her shutting the door and closing it for good.
Yeah.
And also I wouldn't put it past the mom to have, you know, figured out a way to like slip like a ruler underneath the door to push the plank or something like that to open the door and check in on her in the middle of the night. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Because she's really overprotective. So,
yeah.
That's why I don't think it happened at all. And I'm pretty confident.
That makes sense too. I just am like, that's interesting that because she calls attention to it, right? Nina goes to move it and it's moved.
Yeah.
So I feel like the director wants you to know.
Yeah, sure.
But also, that might also be a hallucination.
That's true. It's hard to know, like, with Nina.
Which I love. I love when you don't know, when you have an unreliable narrator. I really, really like that component of it.
Oh, man. I got nervous for Nina, even though it's just like, I'm not necessarily supporting her, like, continuing on down this path, because it really is, like, really destructive for her. But at the same time, like, I was, like, all nervous for her, like, when the alarms are, or when she notices the clock and, like, how late it is. Just like, oh, I'm late, you know, and she needs to go to the show. It's just like, you've been working. Like, in my head, there's a part of me that's just like, you've already gone this far, like, finish it, you know, like, all of that for nothing in a way. Even if it is just one performance, well, if she didn't kill herself, like, even if she was, if everyone was just like, dude, like, you can't keep doing this, but she at least got one performance in, like, that, yeah, that to me makes it, like, at least worth it, and then you should probably move on and stop doing ballet for the rest of your life.
Well, it's interesting, too, because it's like, does Nina even really want to do ballet? Like, because her, I mean, her mom clearly sort of has put that on her since birth,
yeah,
to
right,
be a ballet dancer. And so is Lily, is Nina in pursuit of being a ballerina dancer, or is she in pursuit of being the perfect daughter, which requires her to then be a ballet dancer?
Yeah.
You know?
I don't know.
Like, you don't even really get to know who Nina is because everything that she is shaped by her mother.
Well, I wonder, if there was ever a point where it stops being about making her mother happy, and it really is just who she is now. But obviously because of, you know, the original goal of pleasing her mom, but now it is just her goal at this point because it's just been so ingrained in her. Yeah,
I think it becomes her goal, but then, like, the new goal, her initial goal was to be the perfect daughter, and that meant she did ballet. And then once she started doing ballet, the new goal is to then be a perfect ballet dancer.
Yeah, sure. You know? Well, it moves, actually.
Did she ever even want this in real life?
Yeah, right. Yeah, I can see that. It's interesting, though, because it moves from her mom, like, being the perfect ballet dancer for her mom, or perfect daughter, whatever, and then it moves to being the perfect ballet dancer for Thomas. And then I think it moves to her just achieving perfection in general. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's actually, it's interesting also to look at all the other people in the company, because everyone's the same, man, it seems. Although, towards the end of the film, like, they're all, you know, congratulating Nina and all that stuff. And at the beginning, when she gets the role of the queen, the Swan Queen, they congratulate her and stuff like that. But you could see, like, they really make it obvious at the beginning of the film to show, like, the competitive nature between every single person and each other. It seems like everyone's looking at each other. Everyone's like, no one has, like, especially, like, the conversation, like in the makeup section or whatever, like, at the beginning of the film, and they're talking about some ballet dancer that, you know,
I think they're talking about Beth.
They're talking about Beth, and she doesn't have it anymore. And it just doesn't seem like they have any real attachment to anyone else there. Like, they'd rather see people go, so, like, even talented, great people go so that they can get their shot, except for Nina. She's, like, the only one. Like, she's competitive for sure, but she's not out to get anyone. She wants it just as much as everyone else, but she's not, like, she is the bigger person and tells Veronica, I think, or someone, I can't remember who her, you know, competitor was.
Yeah, it's Veronica.
Veronica, and tells her, like, congratulations. You know, she didn't know that she didn't get the part, obviously, but, like, she is usually the bigger person. And then, obviously, by the end, she's willing to kill someone to keep her job, but, or to keep her position and her status within the company. But, but it makes, all that to say, like, it makes me wonder if it seems like, with the assessment of, like, Nina wanting to please her mom, like, how many of these ballet dancers are there because of their mom or whatever, you know, living vicariously.
External pressure.
Yeah, exactly. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, one thing that I really like about the other ballet dancers is that I feel like the cinematography is done really well, that they all kind of seem the same. Mm. Like, they just sort of seem like, it's sort of like that feeling in a dream when, like, you know that there are other people there, but their faces haven't been fully rendered.
Oh, yeah. Oh, interesting.
Because, like, you never really see any of the other ballet dancers besides Lily. And you get Veronica and, like, those three at the beginning who sort of, like, are talking. But then as Nina's world becomes more her own psychological landscape and not like the reality around her. Yeah. I just feel like you have this copy paste of a ballet dancer, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
And I really like that they don't even seem like their own selves. They just sort of exist in reference to Nina.
Mm. Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't even think about that. It's one thing that I was thinking about specifically with that and like, I guess, yeah, going along with what you're saying and how everyone's the same, like, it seems like everyone, at least around Nina, is, like, in the same, like, they're all, and to be in that company, it seems like you do have to be in that competitive, like, mode. Like, they're all on mm-hmm. that same level of, like, I want this. And you see that at the beginning when he's going and tapping the different dancers, each one of them think that they're special, you know, but it turns out that they're actually not because they're not up for the part of the Swan Queen.
Yeah.
But... like they all have some pressure of some kind, whether it's just from themselves or from some external pressure. They really want it. They want to be like the best. They want to be the top of like the company, it seems like. And so I just think it was just really cool to see that and to really show that right at the beginning and to show it kind of raises the question of, at least to me, like, does this pressure and this competitive nature, is that just ballet in general, or is it what Thomas brings to the company that makes them so competitive?
I mean, I think in the movie, it's supposed to be that the ballet dancers are competitive,
mm-hmm.
and then that's one of the other external pressures on Nina.
Mm.
Although one thing I think that's interesting is that one of the criticisms that this film got was from ballet dancers saying that its portrayal of like ballet culture and that competitiveness and that sort of all demanding environment is not really indicative of or representative of like ballet culture in general. So I don't know if you can really extrapolate that out into the real world, but I think in the context of the movie, you're supposed to get the feeling that there's all of this like fake niceness between the dancers, but they're actually really deeply competitive. And one thing too that I was wondering while I was watching this was, you get some clips when the other ballet dancers are like really, really nice to Nina and they're like, congratulations, oh, I'm so excited for you. And then you get some moments when they're like whispering about her, like, oh my God, she thinks she's so much better than this, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
And part of me actually wonders, is that even real?
Yeah.
Because the vibe that I get from the other ballet dancers, especially as the movie progresses, is that they give off whatever Nina thinks they're giving off. Like, if she thinks that they're congratulating her because she was perfect, like, at the very end, then that's what they're going to do. And if she thinks that they're jealous and bitter, then that's what they're going to do. Like, to me, they almost feel like a hallucination.
Yeah.
A lot of the perceptions that she has of the other ballet dancers seem like they're too consistent with her own internal state at that time that it feels a little suspicious to me.
Yeah. I think there's an interesting indication of like what might be more of a hallucination with the sound design, and there's like kind of like a distant nature to people's voices or to sounds and stuff like that, like a haziness in a way, like dreamlike, mm-hmm. you know,
like a dream.
Yeah, exactly. And there's a few instances. Yeah, the whispering was one of them where it seemed like it was kind of off to me, and so I thought that was more in Nina's head, and then also. A lot of the applause, like in the audience, I was suspicious about. I'm like, I'm not sure how much of an applause you're actually getting, because it seems like that's also dreamlike in a way. So it was just kind of hard to tell. And you know what? Also at the very end, I am a little bit skeptical of everyone circling around her at the mattress, because I feel like with such a big play and how crowded that room was and how big this company seems to be, around the area at least, I don't know if all of the dancers would have just left their posts. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. They probably would have been lined up somewhere and only Thomas or someone would have been back there to go get her up, to go take her final bow.
Yeah,
right,
because they have to come on stage for the final bow and they have to do... Yeah, like... Yeah, no, I think that's one thing I really like is how unsure everything is.
Yeah.
Like, is any of this real?
Yeah.
I don't know. Is the entire movie just totally fake? And she's...
really just a 12-year-old girl dreaming?
Just staring at that... maybe she's not even a ballet dancer. She's just staring at the musical box that she has.
And yeah.
She's,
it's like that episode of Community where they're all like in the asylum or whatever.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's a later episode. Later.
Yeah.
That's hilarious. Again? Dude, this ad is going again. What is going on? It's on IMDb. Why?
It's okay. I just feel like you're trying to get your ads in here. I feel like
no,
you're,
it's not in the.
You
recording.
Have a deal with some sponsors. You don't want to split the money. You're like, oh, that's weird. Why is this commercial playing?
It's so weird. It's like every half hour, some like audio ad is happening. I have no idea. It's like for a video game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Some of the technical stuff in this that I loved. I love the camera work.
Oh yeah.
That opening scene where the camera's like really smooth. And then there's that moment where you almost feel it getting taken off of the tripod or whatever.
Oh, yeah, right.
And it gets really, like, jerky.
Yeah.
Love that. And then it's kind of like that for the rest of the movie. Yeah. It feels very claustrophobic, very, like, visceral almost.
Do you? What do you think they were trying to say with that? Because I caught on to that real quick like you did, and I was just like...
it's very intentional.
Yeah, it's definitely intentional, but, like, in my head, I'm like, oh, man, are they trying... like, to me, usually... like you see it a lot in like more like suspenseful type of movies. When you see like camera movement like that, that usually indicates that there's an outside party. Like you're really viewing through the lens of an outside party, like spying on someone. Like maybe an imminent danger is going to happen. And I feel like that might have been the case. Like they're trying to make you feel like, to me, it was two things. Either that, like they're trying to make you feel like there's this outside force that you're kind of viewing through the lens of. That's just kind of watching and spectating like all of these different events of Nina and watching over her in a way to make you feel kind of uneasy, like you're viewing through this like outside kind of almost demonic force or something like that, or to really just capture like the hectic nature of what's going on in Nina's mind, you know, just like kind of all over the place, pressure, just constant movement, and just trying to make you feel a part of it.
I think it could be both.
Both.
Because the camera work definitely is intentional and it almost plays a character in and of itself.
Like
it's the camera work isn't just the way through which this movie is filmed. The camera work is a character. Like it is
interesting.
Like the medium is the message at this point, you know?
Yeah.
But I think it's a way of inviting the viewer into her mind. Like that's kind of how I see it. It's very claustrophobic, very, very unstable at times.
Yeah, that's probably the key word right there, unstable.
Yeah.
The camera itself is unstable. It's not on a tripod, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What did you think of that opening scene?
Like the very beginning with the little dance and all that stuff?
Yeah.
It was very cool. It actually reminded me of Being John Malkovich, like the opening sequence of that.
What was the opening sequence of that?
The
Marion, the puppeteering. Yeah.
And that whole scene, that was my favorite part of that whole movie. But, that's hilarious. I haven't really thought about that scene except for like the very beginning. I think it was very cool. And obviously, you know, trying to foreshadow like what's going to be going on in the film. And, you know, it's a part of the ballet itself. It's the only glimpse into like the actual like ballet itself that you get until like really the end. That's not, you know, that's really well choreographed and really well shot. And it's the only time. Yeah. Like you said as well, the camera is really, it's sweeping, it's stable, it's beautiful. You know, it's really shot for that performance specifically.
Yeah, except for at the very end.
At the very end. Yes.
Which I love that you get bookended. You have like this dream scenario where she's doing the play ballet and the camera's very like majestic. And then you get the very end and she's dead and it's very elegant and majestic too.
Which I think
the camera work.
Which I think is Because what is it? What does it go into next? Her waking up in her room, right? Like it's her waking up.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's like her feet or something. They're all jacked up.
Oh yeah, but I think to me that would signify that that was her dreaming and that was her dream or whatever. And and when it starts becoming more unstable, that's probably in my head her waking up and you start
entering the real world
and like really the only respite that she has is through these dreams that were. Like, she's actually in Swan Lake, and everything's just perfect.
Yeah, everything's perfect. No, I agree. I really liked that opening scene. I think I was about 10 minutes into this, and I turned to my wife, and I was like, I think I'm really going to like this movie.
You have that with a few movies. That's hilarious.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, just, like, the vibe that they give off in the first few minutes, I'm like, this is, like, right up my alley. The combination of the music and the cinematography and, like, the characters that we've already gotten, you know? Yeah. And that was the same way here. It was about 10, 15 minutes into it. I was like, I think I'm really going to like this, and I really liked it.
I love the effect as well with the black swan in that dream sequence because, like, you hear the fluttering of the feathers and stuff, and then it goes from just, like, a guy who's wearing... like black clothes and whatever. And then he spins around and then, yeah, he's got all the feathers and stuff. And I was just like, ooh, that's so cool. Like that was a really good transition. But, I also had my eye on the floor too. I was really questioning. I'm like, is this green screened or what? Because I can't tell, like there was something about the depth that was off to me that I'm like, her feet aren't actually touching something real right now.
Interesting.
Which probably feeds into the dream kind of sequence as well.
I didn't notice that.
Yeah. I was questioning it because it was so hazy. Like it seemed like there was a lot of detail in her feet and stuff, but when you were looking at the floor, it was just like, "Oh, this is so hazy."
Interesting.
Yeah, it was odd.
Yeah,
really cool though.
Yeah, one other technical part that I really loved was the use of color.
Mm.
I thought they did such a good job with the black and the gray and the white and the pink. Like I loved. She had like pink clothes on, pink phone. She had a pink room, like really doing a good job of visually portraying her mental status, right? Yeah. Of like being a very naive little girl. And then I love that the mom is always wearing black.
Like, oh, yeah.
Even in this really bright pink room, she's the only black that, like, that's the only, she's always wearing black. And then the rest of the house is pretty dark as well, which is very symbolic of like a lot of different things.
Yeah. Well, you know, what's really cool is like the mom's room where she's painting and everything and everything is Nina. Every painting is a portrait.
Yeah, she's obsessive.
Of Nina. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Which really feeds into that. I didn't even notice that she was wearing black like the entirety of the
film. She's like always wearing black. It's very striking, you know?
It's like she's Nina's black swan.
And then Nina's pretty much wearing pink and white throughout the whole movie until she rebels against her mom. And then she's in like gray.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then she gets more range in her color palette. Yeah. But I just really, really loved the use of color because it's not too in your face.
Right.
But it is very distinctive.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really, really love that. Like, you have, like, the black studio, the black subway car. Like, there's very much this, like, physical representation of, like, the mental landscape.
Yeah. I feel like they really play up the pink a lot. And you could tell, and it, like, becomes really obvious right from the get-go. Like, at some point, there's going to be a part in the film where she's going to throw away the teddy bears and all that stuff and get rid of it because she needs to become the black swan, and if she's surrounded by pink and stuff and the sweet girl kind of name tag on her, then she's never going to be able to shake that off and reach her full potential. What do you think about at the very last part of that sex scene and Lily says sweet girl and then puts the pillow over her face? What do you think exactly they're trying to say?
I don't know.
Because to me, that was like symbolic of like killing the sweet girl. Although at the time I was like, oh, now she's embraced the black swan. But then it kind of keeps going and there's still more that has to happen still. So I was a little confused. But
yeah, I think that's her kind of dealing with her sexual repression.
Oh, interesting. But like the pillow over the face?
I mean, I think to your point, it's kind of like
killing.
Killing that innocent version of her, you know?
Yeah.
Because Lily or Nina has attempted a few times to masturbate to that point.
With her mom in the room, too.
Oh, my God. Yeah, that would be terrible. And then in the bathtub as well, but she doesn't ever,
She's more frustrated at that point,
Yeah. And so I think that this is like, you've dealt with the sexual repression. That's like one barrier.
Mm, interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
That's kind of how I would see it.
I wasn't really thinking about that. I was everything was always just seen in terms of like black swan, white swan. That was, which mm-hmm. I mean, for the majority of the film, it really is. But I wasn't thinking about that at all. Interesting.
Yeah. Do you think that Beth was planning on retiring? Or do you think that Tomah announced that in front of everyone without her permission?
She wasn't planning on it. I think she knew that like it's probably time, but she was, you know, running away from it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, definitely Tomah like forced it on her.
Yeah, I think that she was just, that was news to her and the rest of the audience as well. I don't think.
She made it so obvious. Like, I bet a lot of people were talking later that night. Like, she did not know she was done, dude. Because she stormed off. Yeah, that was crazy.
What do you... Well, no. I was going to say, like, because she's not in it for very much, but I was going to ask, like, what narrative purpose is she serving? But I think it's pretty clear that it's supposed to be like a projection of Nina in the future, right? It's like a projection of what happens when the pursuit of perfection becomes too problematic.
Too problematic. But then at the same time, like, it's also, yeah. Oh yeah. So I guess elaborating even, or like going more in depth into that, like for sure it's problematic because it becomes her entire identity. Like the ballet mm-hmm. and this company and Tomah, like being so like intertwined with him, it's completely her identity at that point. And I don't know if anything was still going on between the two of them. I would assume so, as far as like, you know, sexual encounters and stuff like that, you know, some kind of relationship that's
between Beth and Tomah.
Yes. I would assume that was probably still happening at that point when she was let go. And I bet like for her, because she's so wrapped up in all of that, like just all of a sudden, because she throws a huge tantrum in her dressing room beforehand too. And so like getting that news that it's kind of over, like if that's a part of her life for, you know, decades at that point, I would assume, what else is there? Like, how do you just go back? It's like being in prison and then getting out. It's like, I don't know what to do now.
Shawshank Redemption.
Yeah, like this was my entire identity. I all of a sudden have to just be normal. I have to be a civvy or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, what am I supposed to do now? You know?
Yeah, no, it's true.
She could have been probably a brilliant teacher, but...
I think, too, it was also serving as kind of like a motivator, like a motivation to Nina, because Nina is in pursuit of this perfection.
Yeah.
And Beth is presented as someone who was perfect at one point, but is no longer perfect. And I think Nina may subconsciously be like, Beth is no longer perfect because she's still alive. I need to, in order for me to be perfect, I have to cease to exist after my moment of perfection.
Mm.
You know?
Yeah. And you know, I think there's kind of a beauty in that in a way. Like, you know, you're capturing lightning in a bottle for as long as you possibly can. And that's just kind of the way it goes. Just not necessarily that you age out of it, but you've had your time and now it's time to let someone else have it. Yeah, you gracefully, which Beth did not do.
No. She stepped out of it all right, but right into traffic.
Yeah. And broke her legs big time. Yeah, she's never... she could have... Dude, I bet she would have been like the greatest like instructor out there, but she messed it up. She could have kept in the same.
She would have turned into the what's his face of Whiplash, who's the instructor for ballet.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good point. Although Tomah's, he's a different version of that. That's for sure.
Yeah,
she probably would have had a chip on her shoulder the whole time.
Also, the hangnail scene.
Dude.
Absolute nightmare.
So visceral. For me. Oh my gosh.
Absolute nightmare. Yeah. I have like literal like intrusive thoughts of that happening.
It makes you cringe. Horrible. And like.
Horrible.
Because when you actually do something like that, it doesn't go nearly as deep. But, dude, that went all the way to, like, the second knuckle of her finger.
Yeah. And you see it in cartoons, too, you know? But, like, this was, like, horrible.
Yeah. That got me, dude. But then, and then there's, like, the sigh of relief when she goes to, like, wash it again and it's not there. And, like, oh, it didn't happen. She doesn't have to deal with that. Her nail splitting, too. Like, the crunch that you hear before for her toenail. That freaked me out. Ugh.
Yeah, there's some body horror elements to this for sure.
And then stab in the face, man, with Beth.
Yeah.
Do you think that did we talk about that? Do you think that happened or no? I'm very confused because she had a bloody nail file or whatever it was at the end.
I don't know.
Because she drops it in the elevator, Nina does. And so it's
let's see what the internet says.
Someone got stabbed in my head, but I don't. Well, in Beth's head, really. But I don't know. I have no idea. I don't know what it would have been. Maybe she used the file to scratch her shoulder blade or whatever. I'm not sure. But it's definitely bloody. But then again, she could have been hallucinating that it was bloody. I really don't know. It's so hard to tell with this movie.
Yeah, I mean, she hallucinates blood quite a bit.
Yeah. Suffering for her craft, I guess, is the way that she sees it. Well, suffering for her craft in certain areas, and then at the same time, it's more of just like feeding into her. It's like just a really destructive nervous tick. It's the way that anxiety, dealing with her anxiety over it all. You getting anything? It doesn't say anything about it?
No, I can't find anything about her specifically.
Interesting. I don't know.
Do we think she's dead? That's the real question.
I mean, she might not be dead, but her face is stabbed up. That's for sure. Yeah, Beth is like really destructive.
Yeah.
Self-destructive. It's and is that a result of Thomas and his behavior towards her, or is that more of her? Is that something that
I mean, it kind of goes back to what you said of Whiplash, right? It's just like pursuit of perfection in the arts.
Yeah.
Like I don't think it's unique to any one person or one type of art, but
sure. Interesting. I had this thought with like Nina and trying to achieve perfection and stuff like that, but specifically like with the idea of seduction and how that would help her become like the Black Swan, and you know, get the right movements and the right persona and the right feeling and vibe from it. I was kind of thinking, it was in bed last night before I was, you know, I was like trying to fall asleep, and I was thinking like, there's a difference between, like achieving or wanting control versus having control, you know? And you see that clear distinction between the two because the entire, or through in the movie, because the entire movie, except for the end, Nina is wanting control and you could see it in her eyes. And because she wants control, she doesn't have control because no one's gonna feel like they should be influenced by someone who desperately wants control. That's what I was reading into it because they seem desperate. She seems desperate like the entire movie to achieve that perfection and have that control over and that command over the Black Swan kind of side that she needs to achieve. But when she hallucinates killing Lily, and has both the Black Swan and White Swan and has that in her now, she has control. And that's the difference. And she goes over and makes out with Thomas before going back on and all that stuff. And Thomas like, whoa, like, you know, butterfly.
He's been seduced.
Yeah, he's been seduced. And he sees that in her and all that stuff. And that's like that's that specific spot in the movie where she has control now. She has command over it now.
Yeah.
I thought that was just really interesting to see. Just to see it. And Natalie Portman does such a great job playing such a, like, kind of a desperate character in a way.
She's so good in this.
Oh yeah, it's great.
I think she won Best Actress for this performance.
I wouldn't be surprised. Yeah. It's incredible. We could both agree that Thomas is like a terrible dude, right?
Yeah, for sure. He's very selfish.
Very selfish, for sure.
Like he's definitely using Nina and Beth.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. It's so weird because, like, again, like, you know, not to bring up Whiplash too much, but like both both his character and the character in Whiplash, the band instructor, they both are people where the ends justify the means, right? Like 100%.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it's like it's more ambiguous to me, like where the lines are. It's more blurry to me with Whiplash than it is with this, because there's real like
as dramatic.
There's sexual abuse. Like there's really like he's forcing himself on Nina like constantly, right? And especially at the beginning, you know, they're trying to do their choreography and stuff. He tells the other people to go home. Like, I don't want to take up your whole night or whatever he says. And then just, yeah, puts his hands on her, makes out with her, grabs her at her crotch, starts pleasuring her and all that stuff. And she doesn't pull away, but at the same time, like, does she feel like she could even pull away? I don't know.
Yeah, there's a very big power difference there for sure.
Exactly. And so it's just like, but to him, by the end of that part of the scene, he's just like that was me seducing you. It should be the other way around or something. He says something like that. Mm-hmm. And so all of that was just to teach her a lesson, right? Which is something that the Whiplash guy would have done as well. I can't remember his name right now. But, not, you know, he would have had like the same type of thing that would have happened, right?
The psychological manipulation.
Throwing a symbol at someone's head. Or a chair, I guess, really. But so you see those parallels between the two different characters, but to me, I see Tomas as a much worse guy. Personally. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, he's...
It's stuff that you can go to jail for, man.
Yeah. Yeah, and the way that he takes credit for, like, everything, too. Like, Beth is in the audience, and he's on stage still, you know. Even though she's the performer, he's getting all the attention, you know.
Mm.
It's all very selfish, comes across to me.
Yeah, that's true. It's interesting, man.
Yeah, but I love this movie.
Yeah.
Glad I bought it.
Hey, you bought it.
Yeah, it was only a dollar more on Apple TV to buy it, so.
How many?
And I'm glad I spent the extra dollar, because it was great.
How many of these movies have you bought?
I don't know, maybe a handful?
Yeah, I think you probably own a couple of them. I'm sure, or you already own, like Ready or Not, I'm sure you already owned.
Yeah, Ready or Not, Pleasantville.
Okay.
I've bought maybe 5 to 10 of them.
Really? All right, nice.
Yeah.
Nice. Dude, I love my collection of movies right now. I have so much stuff. It's great. Yeah, same here, man. This movie's great. I think it's amazing. 8 out of 10 only? 9 out of 10, at least, in my opinion. This movie's amazing. Obviously, if... I'm assuming that we're done with the conversation?
Yeah, I don't have anything else to say.
All right, me too.
Bye.
That would be hilarious. Should we just edit like that from now on? I don't even know. No. I totally worth a buy in my opinion. I don't remember how much was it? What'd you buy it for?
It was $5, $4.99 on Apple TV.
What the?
A steal.
Yeah, that is a steal for sure. Yeah, absolutely buy it or rent it. Well, no, yeah, just buy it. I guess if it's almost
the same $3.99 to rent or $4.99 to buy.
Yeah. Totally worth it. Of course, if you listened to the entirety of this episode without watching it and you're thinking about watching it, look up that parental guide. Throughout the discussion, you've already heard a lot of the stuff that happens in it. So if you're not comfortable with a lot of those things, you know, be aware. Or find it on a streaming service at some point, maybe, I don't know. And then also get VidAngel or whatever that can coincide with. but... That concludes our discussion on Black Swan. Now we will go on to our final little fun segment, which is called Fire Partner Critique. Of course, we're just choosing characters, or not characters, actors or cast members, just in general, who you would fire, who you would partner with, or who you would critique. First, Big T, who would you fire out of everyone in this cast?
No one jumps to mind.
Mm-hmm.
The first person that comes to my mind is Mila Kunis.
Oh, really?
Just because I don't think she's a great actress, but I thought she did really well in this, actually. I thought she did a good job.
Yeah, I think so.
So, I don't know. Who would I fire? I don't know. I can't think right now.
Well, to me, I don't even know the other person's name. I just thought of this other person right now, but originally I put Winona Ryder because I think she does a good job, but I think she could have, I compared to all the other performances, it was like okay in my opinion.
Yeah.
But you could probably easily say like the one guy that's at the bar, whoever plays Tom or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
Anyone could have played that character. It didn't even matter. The other guy was Sebastian Stan. Did you see that? Did you notice that?
Yeah.
I was like, what?
Yeah, my wife was like, I know him. He's familiar.
Yeah, that was surprising. I was just like, oh, wow. Didn't know.
Yeah.
So is that, yeah, I don't know. Would you probably just say that guy, whoever?
Sure.
Who would you partner with?
Natalie Portman.
Same here, man. Incredible.
She was phenomenal in this. She did such a good job.
Incredible.
Like a powerhouse performance.
Yeah. Music and sound effects would probably be a close second for me because I just,
yeah,
it was brilliant the whole way through. Who would you critique?
Who would I critique? I would critique the guy, the piano player who stops playing in the middle of it. And he's like, I have a life.
I have a life.
I'd have been like, deliver that with more energy. But it was pretty funny that he was so deadpan about
it. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that was really funny. I like that.
I don't really know.
He just stops in the middle. He's like, you can tell he's thinking the whole time. Like, this
he's
is
like,
stupid.
I'm done with this.
Yeah. It's awesome. I said the guy who plays Tamar, Vincent Castle or Cassell, however you pronounce his last name. Everyone's performances were really great. I think his kissing could have been less disgusting.
Gross.
It was so forceful, man. Like all.
Yeah, talk about body horror.
I guess at the same time, maybe that was really perfect for his character, I guess, but.
Yeah, I feel like he was told, like, kiss like you're eating an ice cream cone.
as aggressively as possible.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's really cold, and so you want to try to eat it as fast as you can. It's melting.
Eat it now.
Eat it faster. Eat it faster.
Yeah, dude. Some of these answers were kind of hard to pick. Like, even Winona Ryder wasn't like necessarily fireable, mm-hmm. but you know.
Yeah. How dare you fire Winona Ryder?
Oh, she's great. I don't know. She's great, but
yeah,
I don't know. Cool, sweet. Well, there it is. Big T, are you interested to know what our next film is that we're going to be covering?
On the Edge of My Seat.
All right. Well, the next film we will be covering, this is one that I was on the fence about just because I haven't seen it since I was like 5 years old. And
oh, it's an oldie.
I honestly don't remember hardly anything about it except for the very end, but I remember it moving me as a kid, and I'm wondering if it'll do the same as an adult. I just need to feel something. It is a 2001 film, I Am Sam.
Oh.
Have you ever seen it?
My wife loves this
movie. Oh, really?
She watched this movie like all the time as a kid.
Have you seen it then?
I have, yeah.
Oh, man.
It's been a really long time, though. But she watched it so much to the extent that her family was like, is there something wrong? She's like five. Why does she love this movie so much?
Maybe she really relates to Dakota Fanning's character. I don't know.
Yeah, she loves this movie.
Dude, yeah. I honestly really don't remember anything about it like at all, except the ending. There's just a few parts that I remember being kind of emotional at, like as a kid, and I'm surprised that I was like emotional at some of those parts. And so I'm just really interested to see like if it lands for me as an adult. I'm assuming it will. I'm hoping it will. I'm pretty sure there's like a John Mayer song at the end or something, and I remember that like totally like working perfectly as a kid, like for what was going
on.
That's so funny. I thought it was great.
I love that you have like a distinct memory of watching this as a little kid.
I watched it at my aunt and uncle's house, and it was like with my cousins and stuff, and they just put it on, and I probably really, I don't know, I probably shouldn't have been watching the film. I don't remember everything that happens in it, but I remember also thinking, like, I don't think I should be watching this film. But they were letting me watch it anyway, and I was just, maybe it was a clean flicks version of it, I have no idea. But it was interesting to me, and I don't know, for some reason it's always stuck in my mind, even though I haven't seen it since I was 5 years old. It's always been very prominent in my head.
I'll be prepared to come do some therapy with you then next
time. Yeah, I'm going to like bawl my eyes out or something, multiple parts of this film. And maybe it is Dakota Fanning, just like how great of a job she did.
Yeah, she's a great child actress.
Yeah, she like disappeared for a while. Now she's kind of resurfacing-ish.
Is she?
She was in a Quentin Tarantino film like a couple of years back.
How old is she now?
Oh man, I bet she's like in her mid 30s.
She's older than us?
I would assume that she's a little older than us. Maybe she's the same age. Because if I was 5, I bet she was like 8 in the film.
But you weren't 5 in 2021.
Oh yeah, 2001. Oh yeah, that's true.
Or 2001.
That's a good point.
She's 30.
I felt like I was
she
5.
She just turned 30.
It's such a hazy memory. I just assumed that I was like 5 years old. But yeah, you're right. 2001. I would have been 8. Yeah, so she's like our age. That's crazy.
Yeah.
That actually totally throws me off. She really did disappear, though, and she barely did anything. Like, she was huge in so many films. Like, she was going to be
she was the childhood actress for a long time, right? It was like her, and then it was like Abigail Breslin.
Who's that?
Abigail Breslin is like, have you seen,
is that like Matilda? She was in, that girl was in a lot of different things.
No. That's Ben Shapiro's cousin.
What? Really?
Have you seen Little Miss Sunshine?
No.
She's in, she's in Scream Queens.
Breslin.
You'll recognize her when you see her.
Oh yeah. Okay. Yeah. Sure. Yeah. Yeah. That's true. Yeah. She was pretty big. Huh. Yeah.
And then for a while it was
Zombieland and stuff. Yeah.
It was McKenna Grace too. Like, she's kind of been the most recent iteration.
McKenna Grace.
She's in Gifted. She's in actually.
Oh yeah, she's one of the more recent. You know, like, child actresses.
There's all, like, every like 10 years or so, there's like a new Dakota Fanning. And before Dakota Fanning, it was like it was, what's her face? E.T.
Oh, Drew Barrymore. Yeah,
Drew Barrymore. Yeah, yeah. That's always like a cute blonde girl.
There you go, dude. That's all you need. Well, it's funny. Well, you also had like Dakota Fanning, but then you also had Elle Fanning, kind of.
Yeah.
A little bit there. I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, cool. Yeah, we'll be covering that on what date? Because May 6th. May 6th is when the episode for I Am Sam will be coming out. So get ready. I'm excited about it. I've kind of been thinking about doing this movie for a while, but there was just other ones that I wanted to do first. So yeah. I'm really stoked. And that's really cool to hear that you guys have watched this film, or at least like your wife has watched this film a ton and you've watched it, but it's been a while. So
yeah, it's been a while. I haven't watched it in a long time.
It'd be cool to revisit it. I'm pumped. All right. Well, Big cool. T, thanks a lot. Thanks for your time. Thanks everybody for listening.
You're welcome.
We love you. Maybe. Well, I love you. Big T, I don't know.
You're okay.
You're all my little princesses. I'm just kidding. And we'll catch you on May 6th. See ya.
Bye.